How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. It is late on a Sunday night slash Monday morning. We have just crossed into Monday, right? Midnight was
yes,
15 minutes
officially,
ago.
Officially. Yeah. Officially.
So, happy Monday, everybody. The Lakers are amid, what is it, a seven-game losing streak, eight-game losing streak?
That's a good question that you should have asked me to look up before we went on the air.
I mean, what's the difference? Like, if it's 7, 8,
yeah,
nine, whatever
yeah,
that, it is.
Yeah, good point. What do numbers matter anyway?
The Lakers are amid...
seven-game losing streak.
They are stuck in a rut. It feels like even though the Lakers are trying to tank, all these losses piling up the way they have just feels to, you know, the weight is feels like quite a burden at the moment. So let's
be clear here. You know it's best for the team to lose. You want the team to lose, but you're upset with the losing.
I don't know if I necessarily want the team to lose.
Okay.
We'll get into that in a second. Yeah. And basically what Harrison and I are doing, because we're both tired on a Sunday night slash Monday morning.
No, man, I got all the energy in the world.
Well, because I'm exhausted on a Sunday night slash Monday morning, we just turn on the microphones and we're gonna talk through this. We're gonna tweet through this. We're gonna try to be therapeutic in our analysis of the Lakers' current situation. Before we get to that, though, make sure you're following the show on Audio Boom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and today's Fast Break. Use those promo codes on SeatGeek and Mack Weldon. Again, you heard Harrison. We had a fun week of podcasts last week. So if you've missed any of it, Harrison had a lot of fun with Larry Nance Jr. That was great. That's probably one of the better things we've ever done as a show.
I mean, to be honest, I asked him if he would be my new co-host instead of you, and unfortunately he said no. But
his
I mean, he might come back
a little
at
better.
That point.
His day job pays pretty well.
Yeah, that's true. That's a fair point. I mean, I'm still going to work on it, but for now, you're a good fill-in.
Yeah. I tried something different with a trade proposal podcast with Ben Gibson of 8.9 Seconds. 8.9 Seconds. We figured out a Paul George trade. So go ahead and check out all those shows. I told you where to find them. Let's go ahead and jump into this one, though. Basically, the Lakers got smoked by the Celtics. They made it a game against the New Orleans Pelicans, but for a good portion of the second half, that really wasn't, you know, it was just kind of one of those games where the other team
let's call it what it was. For the third quarter, the Lakers, I don't know if they came out of the locker room. I'm convinced that they just put a bunch of mannequins on the court for like the first like 10 minutes of the third quarter.
What's going on in the third quarters?
We've talked about this before. Like, what, like, our theories on what is going on at halftime that is just making them collapse. I mean, there's the logical theory that teams are making adjustments and the Lakers don't quite have those counter punches down yet. And then there's the speculation theories that, you know, they're going in there and I don't know, like, they're finishing off the rest of the catering from before the game. Like, maybe the Lakers' former coach sometimes sneaks into the arena, and, like, while Luke is giving using the bathroom, like, he comes out of the bathroom at halftime, and, like, the Lakers' coach from last year has already told the team why they're soft and they suck again before, like, he gets escorted out. And so maybe that's what's going on, and, like, it just demoralizes them, and they come out in the third, and they're like, oh, man, we do suck.
I was wondering tonight, while after watching the game, I was kind of thinking to myself, what would happen? Because right now, I think the players know that fans are talking about, you know, team tank, and we got to keep this pick, and, you know, fans aren't necessarily rooting against the Lakers. I mean, hell, the vibe against the Pelicans.
Staples Center, every single time they get going, Staples Center is pretty lit. Like, yeah. when they're playing okay, Staples Center gets pretty lit.
I would argue the people who are at those games now, especially
everybody there wants them to win. Like, even if they kind of don't, like, when they're there, they're cheering for them when they're playing well.
And I would argue that the people who are there, and the people who are still watching, and the people who listen to the show and read, you know, blogs and keep up, like, that's the best fans. Like, when people say, you know, Laker fans are bandwagoners and they're fickle and this and that and the other, I kind of want to just point to them. Just watch any close game on Staples Center, and it sounds a hell of a lot better than, you know, any random night in Atlanta. You know, sorry, Atlanta fans. All right, I was wondering, though, after watching that game, I wonder how players would take it if fans just outwardly rooted against their team because the Lakers need their pick. Because right now it's kind of an inherent, implicit kind of vibe that the players know what's going on, but fans are still rooting for the team. I wonder how they would respond. Would they be put in a better spot if they were being rooted against in their own place, do you think?
Like, do I think that would motivate them?
I guess that's one way to ask the question, yeah.
I mean, no, I don't know that they would play better if the fans were, like, booing them.
Well, I don't know if it would be, like, booing them, because booing is, like, bullying, right? I would say if fans were rooting, you know, cheering anytime the opposing team made a basket.
Oh, so, like, every game's basically a road game.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Unless they go to, like, Phoenix, right? If they were to play in Phoenix and Phoenix's fans started cheering for the Lakers.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know that that would necessarily help, to be honest. I'm not sure I get where you're coming from.
I don't think it would help either, but I would love to see just how that hypothetical might play out.
The team tank invades Staples.
Yeah. So from now on, if you're buying tickets, preferably on SeatGeek, by the way, but if you're buying tickets and you're going to the game, just start rooting against the Lakers and see how players talk about it after they're in the post game scrums, where nowadays it's like you can basically schedule which quotes players are gonna say, and when they're talking about the third quarter, oh, we just didn't compete, this and that, you know, whatever they might say there.
Yeah, I mean, Brandon Ingram is going to tell you that he wants to make his mark on defense and that he's trying to make the right decisions on offense. Mm-hmm. Every single press conference, for the most part, regardless of what you ask him.
It's like Russell Wilson saying that he wants to get better every single day.
Yeah, I mean, they understand what the right things to say are. Mm-hmm. That's for sure.
But I wonder, you know, I kind of come back to if the fans started cheering for the other team, I wonder if they would keep saying the right things.
They might get kind of fed up with that, I'd imagine. We've seen how a lot of players have reacted to, like, hostile home crowds.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Paul George, future years. Laker, has already commented about it in Indiana.
Yeah.
All right, so the Lakers wind up having a really frustrating weekend, right? It started Friday night.
Since the All-Star break.
Winless since Magic took over.
Yeah. So, is Magic Johnson the problem?
Obviously. All I see is facts in front of us, so.
Yeah, numbers don't lie.
But the Lakers start their weekend off on Friday night, right? They played Boston on Friday night.
Yes.
And get smoked, right? And it comes down to, like Luke said, that Boston just shot the ball really well. D'Angelo Russell said they didn't compete in the third quarter. I went to a dark place because I just hate losing to Boston, especially, you know, Jay King came on Locked On Lakers, and I guess technically I went on Locked On Celtics as well. And, you know, he said that Boston hasn't been able to blow anybody out all year. But boy, did they figure out a way on Friday.
Where there's a will, there's a way, I guess.
And it got me to ask the question of, you know, because again, Russell says they didn't compete in the third quarter, and these third quarters are happening. It's the only consistency that the Lakers have really shown all season, I would say. The Boston game took me to a place where I was asking, do I actually trust the talent that the Lakers have put together, you know? And I didn't come to any kind of conclusion, although my Twitter timeline went to a dark place, and plenty of people have chimed in my mentions as far, you know.
And my mentions. I had people telling me that I needed to get you under control. Just for anyone listening to the podcast, if I ask Anthony to tweet something and it's not like he just got fined for saying the name of the Lakers' last head coach, he's not going to listen to me. I'm not his boss.
No.
Like,
no. I made an analytics joke. Like,
okay.
Harrison can't tell me what I can and cannot tweet.
Ugh.
But I found myself. So Harrison, did you? I know you probably haven't asked that question of yourself. I think you have a higher perception of what the kids might be able to offer than I do at this point. But do you think it's fair of me to start asking that question? You know, have the kids made enough progress to feel comfortable and confident about the direction of this rebuild still?
I guess it depends. It's like everything else. It kind of depends, right? But I think that they've shown progress, certainly. I mean, they already have two more wins than last year. So there's that. And, I mean, some of that was on the back of Lou Williams, and some of that was on the back of Kobe no longer being on the team, which, again, all due respect to Kobe, he just didn't play very well last year.
He was the worst player in the NBA last year.
Yeah, I don't even have an easy rebuttal to that. But I mean, he was the worst high usage player in the NBA last year. Like, that's certain. And I mean, there were guys at the end of benches that were worse than Kobe, but like they weren't using up 30% of their team's possessions. But as far as the young guys, like Randall has certainly improved, I would say, in just about every single aspect of his game. I think his numbers, his efficiency, all that stuff is pretty much up across the board. Jordan Clarkson, on the other hand, I would say for most of the year has regressed, but with the stipulation that after they traded Lou Williams, I've actually for the most part liked how Clarkson has played. I mean, he shot like crap against Boston, except for in the third quarter, which was like one of the more bizarre scoring outputs I've ever seen, where he like goes scoreless in every single quarter but the third, where I think he had 20. Mm-hmm. And so that was like that was weird. But Clarkson has been a bit better lately. He's kind of offered at least a little bit of hope that, yeah, he could be better without Lou Williams, and so maybe there's a little bit more growth to be mined there. I don't know. I've seen Lakers Twitter is very down on Clarkson lately. I think when we talk about this, ultimately, though, we're talking about Russell, right? Like, mm-hmm. When we're saying, has the young core shown enough progress, we're not talking about Zubats. We're not talking about Larry Nance Jr., who was hurt against the Pelicans tonight, and that would be a big loss for the Lakers if they weren't able to get minutes from him, I guess. And, you know, we're not talking about Randall, who pretty clearly has improved. We're not talking about Clarkson, whose ceiling, we kind of know what it is. Ingram is a 19-year-old rookie who is too skinny for the NBA right now. And it's just, he was always going to have a tough time. I think people knew that going in. He just wasn't that NBA ready. And so it comes back to Russell. Has Russell shown enough progress? And to be honest, like, I think there have been flashes that you'd like to see. There have been more flashes than last year. I think in the fourth quarter against the Pelicans, he was really good. But from what I watched of it, admittedly, I did not see every single second of the fourth quarter. I was working. But I, you know, I think there are reasons to be optimistic, but I definitely don't think that – I don't think that anyone necessarily should be as like, yes, Russell's going to be really good as they were last year, which is kind of weird considering that he struggled more last year. But last year there were clearer reasons for why he was struggling, whereas this year he seems to struggle and there seems to be times where there's like weirdness with Walton and – I mean, and he's in his second year, and so he should be a little bit better. And so, I mean, it's mixed up. I still think he has a very high ceiling. I still think he's going to be really good, but I also couldn't blame people if they were starting to worry a little bit, which I get the sense that you are. I don't want to put words in your mouth, though.
I am a little bit worried. So, I'll put it like this. It's easy to look back on the last head coach and say, he was such an incorrigible douche that I could understand anybody not wanting to play for that guy, right? I wouldn't blame Russell at all if he came out at some point, was brutally honest about his time under that coach, and just said, I couldn't play for that guy. The double standards were terrible.
Oh, that's going to come. It's either going to be in his biography someday or it's going to be in like an interview in like 10 years.
Yeah.
But
and when that happens, I will applaud him for it because it's probably objectively true looking back on it. But with all that said, this is now the second head coach, and Luke is by all measures a really good basketball coach, right? And somebody who seems really easy to get along with. And nobody has said anything to the contrary, really.
I mean, I'd argue harder on the second one than I would on the first one. I don't know that we know that Luke is a really good basketball coach. I think that he's a good one. We've seen enough for that right now. Yeah. I mean, that's ultimately arguing semantics. But I don't know that we – like, there have been enough little things that he's struggled with that you're like – I mean, you have to wait and see how he adjusts to that moving forward. But like there have been little rotational things that have been kind of weird. His over-reliance on the bench at times, even when it's struggling, and his short, much, much shorter leash with the starters. Although I think that with the starters, some of that might be these are more of the promising younger guys, and so I'm giving them a shorter leash to kind of teach them lessons, I guess. Mm-hmm. But the over-reliance on the bench thing that has been a little bit weird, and there have been other little rotational quirks. But yeah, overall, I'd say that he's a very promising head coach.
So this is now, though, the second head coach who he hasn't butt heads with Russell as publicly as the last guy did. But there has been like this weird dynamic of, like you said, he just seems a little too comfortable relying on Lou while Lou was there. Right, he's always seemed a little too comfortable to, you know, to have a shorter leash with Russell than with other players, and you know it kind of makes you wonder what's going on behind the scenes. And I mean, frankly, I've heard enough from enough people to you know wonder about how easy it is to get along with Russell, and you know when you combine all these things together and you look at the progress that hasn't matched expectations this year, yeah, I mean, I'll put it to you like this, Harrison. Would you, let's say the Pacers come calling, Larry Bird calls Magic up and he says, you know, the centerpiece of the package that we are asking for coming back for Paul George is either the top three picks or the Lakers keep it. Right now, it'd be the second pick if the math plays out as expected, right? So either the number two pick.
Yes, low key thing that we should mention: Lakers moved into number two in the tank race today, yeah, with Phoenix's win.
Good work, guys. Let's give them a little. No, that's a sad applause.
Yeah, I'm not even going to applaud for that. Good job.
So the centerpiece of this package that would be going back to Indiana could either be that number two pick, D'Angelo Russell or Brandon Ingram. Of those three assets, who would you be most comfortable giving up? Or what would you be most comfortable giving up?
Huh. That's an interesting question. I could end up looking really wrong on this, but honestly, Ingram.
See, I guess I understand the Ingram answer because you're getting a small forward back. So just in terms of immediate...
That's part of it for sure, but I think Russell has the higher ceiling.
So I actually would go the other way. I'd probably give up Russell in this. The pick to me is something that I wouldn't want to give up if I was the Lakers. Like if I could avoid that, I'd order it Russell then Ingram then the pick in terms of what I would be most comfortable giving away. And okay. it's for a couple of reasons. It's because frankly the expectations that I had for him this year, and I didn't even have that high of expectations for him. You know, I thought he could be a quote-unquote, you know, something close to a breakout player, but I thought there was enough talent around the league to not want to put him in the breath of guys who could really actually break out, right? So I kind of looked at it, you know, in that respect. Two of the guys, if the Lakers do keep their top three pick, two of the guys in the top three are lead guards in Markel Fultz and Lonzo Ball. So I feel like you could just, if you're going to trade away Russell, then he could basically be replaced immediately by more of a blank slate. Then that's
yes,
great.
That is, that was something that I had to think about when you asked me this, but mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
And again, there's just, you know, the saying, where there's smoke, there's fire. And we've both heard stuff about how easy or not easy he is to deal with, and I think that's a fair thing to worry about, combined with his, you know, inconsistent play, and you know the stuff that, you know, we see or can perceive going on with now his second head coach. There's enough smoke there to really start to wonder, all right, can this guy be the centerpiece of a rebuild in Los Angeles? I just don't know if he can anymore. I don't know if I feel as confident as I'd like to feel about his ability to do so.
Yeah, I mean, I think the numbers are really up there for a player his age when you look at per 36s, you look at efficiency, you look at all that type of stuff. And so I'm still really high on him. But again, with all of kind of the weirdness this year, with the struggles at times, the benching and all that stuff, I wouldn't blame people for losing a little bit of optimism in him. But I still think that he's going to be very good.
Yeah. And look, I hope I'm wrong, right? Even if he winds up not being, you know, if he does get moved in a trade or whatever and he goes somewhere else, I would still be pulling for the kid because you want more talent in the NBA, and I don't like seeing kids come out and not live up to expectations. So I hope I'm wrong on this stuff, and I hope that I'm just overreacting, you know, to a recency bias thing. But that Boston game and the quote that came out from it afterward, the you know, not competing in the third quarter, like that just rubbed me the wrong way. If you aren't going to get up for that game, then what are you actually going to get up for? Like what would it actually take to get somebody to, like him, of his talent, to play as hard as David Nwaba does on any given play?
I mean, I think that's a little bit, I don't know. I think he said that multiple times this year. I mean, if he wants to give that honest assessment, I think that's fine. I'd rather have a player be honest than, you know, just give kind of the prepackaged answer.
But do you think it's possible, though, that it might not be completely honest? Like, it might be a prepackaged answer?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's possible. I mean, I don't know, man. I don't know.
All right, so that... everybody who's been listening for the last 20 minutes, we have no idea what we're talking about. So
no, I mean, honestly, we don't. We're trying to predict the future a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think that we're coming off like not a great weekend to talk about him. Although he was, I feel like he was okay versus the Pelicans.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess I didn't really, you know, the shot selection, and that was kind of what we'll segue into really, you know, quickly before we move on, because there was a lot of other news to actually talk about that I forgot to talk about before we went on the air in the bus sibling situation. But
yeah, we should probably touch on that.
Maybe. So the shot selection thing has been a hot topic Luke talked about how many threes Russell is taking. Do you have that quote in front of you? I believe it was.
Yeah, it's really long, but essentially the gist of it, and this is via Mark Medina of the LA Daily News, is that Luke basically wants the ball to move before Russell shoots threes. He doesn't really want people shooting pull-up threes. He wants the ball to move around a little bit beforehand.
And then
if the ball has moved around, he doesn't really care if players shoot threes. He's happy to see them shoot those. He just doesn't really seem to want the, like, early in the shot clock, the ball hasn't really made the defense move at all, and you just shoot it.
Yeah. And the other thing that he mentioned before today, I saw it earlier on Twitter today, was the pace at which the Lakers play at. Like, that's something that he's spoken about multiple times. They're the seventh fastest.
They play at the seventh fastest pace in the league. So they aren't playing slow. I don't know how much faster they can. They're already struggling so much with turnovers. I don't know how much faster they can really play.
Well, so I guess I'd put it this way. Pace is how much time is left on the shot clock by the time the shot is taken, right?
It's how many possessions per game.
Okay. All right, that makes a little bit more sense. Because for me, when I think of a team picking up pace, like, I noticed that on a couple times where a rebound will happen and, you know, it's more of a trot up the court for everybody. I don't necessarily see wings out there flying down the court to get out in front of the defense the way I'd like. And I was actually watching for it.
Certainly tonight. Not as much as we did earlier in the year.
Yeah, and I was watching for it. And you know, they're now 60 games into an 80-game season, and they are now completely out of the playoff picture. So I could kind of understand where they're kind of, you know.
And the Lakers actually ranked sixth in pace after tonight, for whatever it's worth. They moved it up.
So I guess I could understand why they wouldn't necessarily be, you know, jumping over each other to sprint down the court every possession at this point in the season. But, you know, for a point guard, that's partially largely on the point guard there, is to get people, to wave people down the court, get down there faster, get the outlet ball out there quicker. If you're a point guard, the cliche is always he is an extension of the coach on the court, and if the coach wants the team to get out there and run a little bit harder, and this is where Magic talked about the leadership that Russell still needs to add to his game. That this is kind of where that reflects poorly on Russell as well. It's not all on Russell. At the end of the day, the wings themselves need to get out there and run a little bit faster. And that's why I like the Corey Brewer thing, where, you know, all Brewer is going to do is go out there and run.
All he does is run. Corey Brewer, even when the games are not being played, he's just like running laps around the court.
He's out there, right? He just ran by my house. That was kind of cool.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Hey, Corey.
Hey, buddy. So,
for some added context, the Lakers actually rank third in pace over the last 10 games. So they're not playing slow.
Yeah. How long ago was Lou traded?
Lou was traded. Man, you always like throw these things out to me. It's like 5 games.
Yeah. So, and I would imagine their pace has picked up since Lou was gone. He was a ball stopper, too. So.
I ran the numbers on that right after it happened. It picked up pretty immediately. They were playing at a faster pace. They were assisting more, mm-hmm. all that stuff.
Yeah. So, and again, it comes down to, and this is where it's kind of tough to have these conversations after such a rough weekend, and we'll talk about it right now why else it was a rough weekend for the organization. But it's tough to have these conversations when you're hitting such a low with the team. And it's tough to remain centered in your analysis. And I think we're only a couple games away from me being able, you know, listeners and people in my mentions, you guys could quote me and say, haha, you sound like an idiot only a couple days ago. You know, so I also
think that it's worth noting more pace doesn't necessarily equal better basketball, mm-hmm. because the Lakers, of the top five teams in pace over the last 10 games, the Lakers are the only one with a losing record.
Huh.
So, like, it hasn't necessarily been better for them.
Yeah,
They're 2-8 over those 10 games, whereas the two teams above them are 5-5, and the two teams right below them are 8-2 and 7-3.
Interesting.
And then there's the Nets in 6 at 1-9. And the Nets on the year are playing with the fastest pace.
All right, slow the hell down, Lakers. Yeah. All right, so let's go ahead and move on then. We'll segue awkwardly because there's no other way for us to do so.
No, I actually think this is a fine segue, because do you feel like the low point the franchise is experiencing off the court is making you less optimistic about the future? Because, you know, you started to get, maybe it's a coincidence, but you started to get a little bit more down on these guys right when Jim Buss and Johnny Buss attempted either the most incompetent coup in the history of coups or just like a huge mistake that ended up getting misconstrued, like just messed up the paperwork, forgot to put Jeannie's name on there the first time.
Let's go ahead and be specific so that people know exactly what you're talking about here. Go ahead and talk people through the situation as you know it to be.
Yeah, sure. I'll go. I guess I'm Locked On Lakers legal expert now. Locked On Legal. And so basically what happened on Friday is I got in my car to head up to the Lakers game that night. And right as I was getting set to leave my driveway, I got a little alert from someone that, you know, from somebody telling me that there was an article written about it in the LA Times, that Jeannie Buss had filed a restraining order against her two brothers because they tried to take over. They tried to basically vote someone else into the as the controlling, or no, as the team governor, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think controlling owner is another way to phrase it.
Controlling owner, something like that. Anyway. They tried to grab power, mm-hmm. and Jeannie Buss's lawyers immediately kind of noticed that there was something in the trust that said that, you know, Jerry had said that he wanted her to be in charge, and she could only be in charge if she had this position. And so it was like against the trust for them to try and vote her out. And so it was apparently for the lawyers at this point pretty easy for them to, you know, block and then file that restraining order against them against the two older Buss brothers from trying to get this meeting going where they would have taken away Jeannie's power. And so it was apparently like a pretty easy thing for them to deflect by just by reading up on it. ESPN has a really good FAQ on it for those of you that want to go read. And
it reminded me of a hypothetical where, you know, you have two guys, like it's like a showdown.
It's like House of Cards if Frank Underwood had no idea what he was doing.
But it's just the visual that crossed my mind was like a shootout back in the Wild West where one guy pulls out like
a super soaker,
the nicest custom gun, you know, that you could possibly pull out. He does so with, you know, incredible ease and fluidity. And then on the other side, this guy tries to reach into his like pants fall down first, you know, and then he tries to pick up the gun and it turns out to be a super soaker. And he's just kind of like, actually, you know what? On second thought, I think
actually, just kidding.
This showdown was a really bad idea. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't insult you. My bad.
you can tell you what, go and take my wife. You could have my house too, my dog. I'm just going to go sit over here and feel sorry for myself a little bit longer.
Yeah. So, I mean, ultimately, I think what this showed, as kind of Jeannie's lawyer phrased it, was that basically this isn't probably going to go away anytime soon.
Yeah.
I don't think that the two older Buss brothers have stopped their scheming to get the franchise back.
No.
And, you know, who is best, most fit to be in charge is kind of like something that I don't really have enough behind-the-scenes information on to really pass judgment about.
Though, based on this coup.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's fair. Based off of this, it would appear to be Jeannie.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I just think that the whole thing, regardless of who's doing what or whatever, is just a horrible, horrible look for the franchise. And like I said, you and I were joking about it, but I was half expecting to see a rumor drop right after that said Paul George is hell-bent on avoiding the Lakers.
Yeah, after seeing that, Sam Amick tweets out something along those lines of,
yeah,
you know,
Paul George
out,
is now hell-bent on never going back to California.
No, Rob Pelinka is hell-bent on making sure Paul George doesn't re-Google the Lakers right now.
Rob Pelinka is hell-bent on getting his clients back. JK, I'm not taking the general manager job.
Yeah. Magic Johnson is hell-bent on orchestrating a coup of his own to get Phil Jackson out of the New York Knicks so that he can take over and rehire Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah, hey, he already succeeded in one coup, so hey, he could do another one maybe.
I didn't think heading into this year that we would say coup this often in regards to the Lakers. I didn't think we'd say it
coup
once.
Coup is the word of the year, that's for sure.
The greatest Laker
always
of all time.
Always a good sign for your franchise when that's being mentioned as much as it has this year.
I'm trying to figure out a way to make this joke work, but at some point, Michael Cooper needs to step in and really help his boy out and really take over the Lakers.
So moving on, I mean, do you think that this kind of coup stuff has colored your analysis, whatever, made you less optimistic about the future?
I was
not going to acknowledge that Cooper joke.
I don't blame you. So I think to a certain extent, like, we always knew the Jeannie Buss's power grab of her own wasn't very smooth either, right? Like, we would have thought by now.
I mean,
like,
part of that, you can argue, isn't necessarily on her. She hires Magic Johnson as an advisor, and then he goes on a two-week media tour where he's talking about how he has Jim Buss's job now, essentially.
I would say, yes, that's true, and that's obviously fair. But that was her hire.
Yeah.
You know? And then the other thing...
Nobody looks good in this. Nobody looks good right now.
The other thing, too, is the Lakers still don't have an actual GM. Now, I mean, you could make the argument that, you know, Rob Pelinka has been the Lakers GM for the last, you know, 10, 15 years anyway. But, you know, I would say it's not a great look that, you know, the guy that they pegged and they didn't cast a wide net to see if they could find the actual best man for the job. They had somebody in mind as soon as they brought in Magic. Like, this entire thing from Jeannie's side doesn't look great. And it obviously doesn't look very good from Jim's side that he tries to orchestrate this coup with the smoothness of a screamo garage band. You know, I don't understand what anybody is trying to do with this Lakers organization. And if I was a minority owner in this situation, I'd be doing whatever I could possibly do to try to figure out, all right, how can we get these inept siblings away from the Lakers organization? I'll put it like this. When Dr. Jerry Buss passed and Magic Johnson took the podium, he looked directly at Jeannie. He looked directly at all the siblings, and he asked with tears in his eyes, please do not sell the franchise. Keep the Lakers, you know, in the family, in the Los Angeles family, in this extended family. And that was the big theme of his speech back then. And I remember back then, I felt the exact same way, that, you know, the Busses were, you know, just synonymous with success and an organization. Now I was already, that sentiment has already eroded to a certain extent. But at this point, I'm looking at the Buss siblings and the Buss family dynamic, and I'm saying, get this family as far away from the Lakers organization as they can possibly get. Like, if I was the LA governor, when the Lakers are good, there's an economic boom surrounding in that city, immediately surrounding Staples Center. When the Lakers are bad, people are less likely to go out and support those local businesses that immediately surround Staples Center. And as long as this goes on, and now they're going to be in court in May, on May 15th, they have this trial set, and that's just the beginning of the trial. We don't even know how long that thing might go. Ramona Shelburne wrote it in her piece as soon when Jeannie originally fired Jim. If there is a trial in this thing, it's going to be a knockout, drag out war, in which we're going to find out all kinds of dumb stuff about the organization that we don't. That kind of information isn't good for anybody. And again, this is what happens when nepotism occurs. And the people who are involved in these nepotistic moves aren't smart enough to acknowledge, okay, yeah, we should do whatever we possibly can to get smarter people than we are and non-insular thinking around us as quickly and as effectively as we can. When that doesn't occur, that's when you get siblings filing restraining orders against other siblings. You know,
I mean, to be fair, let anyone who hasn't filed a restraining order on their sibling cast the first stone.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I have two younger brothers of my own. They aren't allowed within 500 feet of my house, so I should have mentioned that earlier.
Yeah, you should have given that disclaimer before.
I don't know. I would say. I hadn't actually thought of it before you asked me the question as far as whether this family dynamic has affected my analysis of the kids. Frankly, the frustration with the kids has been as soon as Paul George was on the table, I said, I want to watch an actual NBA player on the Lakers before I die. And at the current rate, I don't know if we're going to. So that painted it more than anything. But when you mentioned this, you know, to just add on top of everything that's been going on with all the losing of the last 4 years, then yeah, it's kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. And that's where my Twitter timeline went to a certain place, and that's where you get 5-minute rants like that we've just withstood.
Like I said before in the previous segment, I don't know, man. It's nobody looks good right now, I think, is the largest takeaway from this. I just none of the owners, none of the players, no one on the coaching staff, really. I mean, just everything looks bad right now.
Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that the Lakers could win a couple games and people would be frustrated because, you know, that would affect the tank
hashtag
status.
Team tank.
Yeah. But if the Lakers go out and they win a couple games and Russell drops 30 and 15 or something crazy, or, you know, Ivica Zubac comes back from his quad contusion and just starts dropping skyhooks on everybody's heads, then, you know, our opinions of the franchise and the organization might change. But as of right now, it's not a good place for the Lakers. And one would only hope that it, you know, this is rock bottom. You know, that restraining order from sibling to sibling is rock bottom.
I think the court date's going to end up being where rock bottom comes in at some point.
Yeah, it's like John Oliver said, you know, where you look way up there into the clouds and into the atmosphere and you say, oh, that's the last rock bottom. all right, so that does it for this episode.
Quickly, before we go, I did want to give Chris McGee and the McGee family a shout out. It sounds like he lost it on Spectrum. They said that he lost his dad tonight. That's why he wasn't with the show. And, you know, I don't know that he's listening to this, but just like Chris is, or Geeter is one of the nicest, kind of most genuine people that I think either of us have met inside or outside of basketball. And just want to say we're thinking of you.
Thoughts and prayers, Chris, to you and the rest of your family. That's a tough one. That's it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Make sure you're finding the show on Audioboom, iTunes, Silver Screen, and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and today's Fast Break. Use those promo codes. We'll be back at it again tomorrow. We'll preview the Lakers playing whoever they play. And yeah, hopefully things pick up a little bit as the Lakers have 19 games left in this season. Let's get through this together. Thanks for everybody for tuning in.
Hi, you've reached the High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my family's going to a tailgate and I want our style to stand out from the crowd.
Just go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, Old Navy's got all the latest fall styles. Plus, during Old Navy's colossal sale, you'll save up to 50% off store-wide.
Did you say up to 50% off?
I did, so don't sit on the sidelines. Old Navy has the perfect pants from $19, stylish dresses from $15, and comfy tees for the family from just $6 right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com.
We're cheering for Old Navy.
High Fashion, Old Navy. Valid 10-2 to 10-10. Select styles only.